And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight we are previewing the TCU-Kansas matchup that is happening at, well, this is a weird point, I think, in the season for both of these teams, with results happening completely different than I think most people were expecting coming into the year. To help me take a look at this game, I have Melissa Treblock there from Frogs of War. Melissa, how are you doing tonight?
I feel like that's kind of a loaded question at this point, Andy. So I'm just going to go ahead and take the fifth. My football self is a little bit in a state of shock still with the potential of having back-to-back losses to Kansas and SMU ahead of me. So, you know, we're hanging in the best we can.
Yeah, not only that, but, you know, there's the potential that Kansas could get a winning streak going here after the butt fumble from last year. You know, I promised I'd be nice about it, but of course we had to have to actually talk about it. Coming into the year, I don't think most people were necessarily too concerned in terms of TCU fans about this particular game or about this, honestly, where you're at so far in the season. But it sounds like things really haven't gone the way you guys were expecting. Can I about sum it up?
Well, I mean, I think that if you had told TCU fans that they would be 2-1 at this point in the season with a road loss to Purdue, most people would be like, okay, that makes sense. I mean, this is a Power 5 team on the road, Rondale Moore, Elijah Sindelar, all that. Then after what TCU did to the Boilermakers, I think that we all raised our expectations even higher and kind of thought like, hey, we may have something really special here, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So to see things unravel against SMU last week, especially when it comes to the defense, it's been a little bit of a shock to the system. And I think that people don't know what to think about this team. And there's a level of disappointment that after what we saw, you know, a week and a half ago, is quite frankly a little bit shocking to the people that have been following this program.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, unfortunately, people have kind of overestimated Purdue a little bit. They had that opening loss to Nevada. I think people were expecting them to be better than they have this year. They have not looked very good. And so personally, I was having a hard time kind of buying into this was a super spectacular, like, oh my gosh, fantastic defense. Like, it was about the expectation that I had for TCU going into that game, because Purdue's offense has not really looked very good at all this year. I also have the benefit of having a Purdue fan that I work with, who was not very high on them at all. And so my expectations for Purdue were a lot lower, I think, than most people.
Yeah, I guess that's once their quarterback was out for the game and their running back, you know, but they've had so many injuries. We knew this was down. This was a down Purdue team compared to what we expected to see. But the same token, the way that TCU just kind of dominated them on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, they didn't get a rushing yard. They didn't have a net positive rushing yard until the fourth quarter. So I think that we all just kind of thought, oh, hey, you know, this offense obviously is a work in progress, but this is a team that can win some games using their defense and make some noise in the Big 12. And then you come back and you give up 41 points to SMU. And from the very opening possession, it was obvious that the Frogs were overmatched and the SMU was going to be able to do what they wanted. And so it's reset the expectations, not necessarily lowered them from where they should have been, but put them back to where they were coming into the season. This was a team that was picked to finish fourth, not a team that was picked to really contend for a Big 12 title. So coming into Kansas, we're at a turning point, maybe earlier than we expected to be, but I think it's time to kind of take a long, hard look at what this team is, what they can be, and figure out what we should expect out of them going forward.
Yeah, I mean, and to kind of talk about what this team is, because we had a conversation, obviously, before the season started, where we talked about the big questions for this team. And I think the obvious question that we, if I remember correctly, waited until more than halfway through that episode, which you were happy about, was the big question was the quarterback thing. Like, who of the six quarterbacks on the roster was going to go ahead and take the reins and be the leader of this team on the offense? And I think everyone had a reasonable expectation that Alex Delton was probably going to be the guy to start, but that Max Duggan had a good chance of taking the starting job before the end of the year. And we saw that happen a lot quicker than I think most people were planning on it. But, I mean, it seems to me, and this is me being the outsider kind of trying to figure out what's going on here. I know you're a lot closer than I am to this, but Max Duggan has taken over because he was the better option, but I don't know that he's elevated the quarterback play that much higher than what people were afraid was going to happen coming into the year. Is that a fair statement?
You know, I think it is. What we've learned is that Alex Delton is what we were afraid that he was, what we thought he was, which is a guy who can run, who has all the intangibles, but just does not throw the ball well enough to draw any attention from the defense. And if you watch how the secondary for Purdue lined up when Delton was on the field versus when Duggan was on the field, it was a pretty stark difference. He's just not a threat to throw the ball. I mean, we know what he is. We've seen this for going on 5 years now. So Duggan has come in and shown flashes of being the quarterback of the future, but also shown that he's a true freshman in the now. And I think he gives TCU the best chance to win out of all of the available options, because what we didn't talk about in summer was Mike Collins is hurt. Justin Rogers is still not fully cleared to be healthy. Matthew Baldwin is now cleared to participate via the having his immediate eligibility waiver accepted, but he's not healthy either. And so you have three guys who all would have been contenders in this role that can't get on to the field because of injury issues. So I think Duggan is a guy that you have to roll with unless Collins is healthy. And we know what Collins is too. Collins was the quarterback when we lost to Kansas last year. So it's to put the Frogs in a really precarious position, because you see the talent for the future, but you have a defense that's capable of winning now despite what happened last weekend, and you have to just kind of roll with the kid and hope that he does enough positive. He hasn't been terrible, and that he hasn't really thrown interceptions. He's fumbled a couple of times. He's shown flashes of being able to do some good things, but he's also shown that he right now is not a guy. He's not Trevor Lawrence, and he's not, you know, one of these elite five-star quarterbacks, but he's also not what Brock Purdy or Alec Bowman were as freshmen either. And that might just be because of the play calling or the talent around him. But regardless, it's not going the way that we all kind of thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has been interesting, to say the least. You know, I think that was kind of my big – you know, I was talking with a few different people and kind of highlighted this as – Kansas's probably best opportunity to get a road win in conference, and the only reason for that is because of all the questions that TCU had on offense, especially with the quarterback, combined with how early this was in the season. You know, I wasn't sure there was going to be enough time for TCU to get it all figured out before Kansas came to town to be 100% certain, you know, that Kansas had no shot in the game. And so, like, I think we've seen that kind of borne out. It looks like we've seen positive flashes. We've seen improvement from week to week, but not quick enough, I think, that you can be super confident, you know, that Max Duggan or whoever ends up being quarterback, you know, if for some reason Duggan doesn't play the majority of the game, like that they have that ability to make the offense gel and lead the team to a victory. So really, well, it comes down to, I think, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the one thing, I think that those are all really fair points. And if I was a Kansas fan, that would be absolutely what I'd be clinging to at this juncture. The worst thing that could have happened to Kansas was TCU losing to SMU. I mean, that is, you know, TCU's lost SMU, I think, two times in the Gary Patterson era. At least the last two times that they've lost, they bounced back and won at least 11 games. And so there is history, you know, there's two things going against or going for TCU that fans are clinging to with a shred of hope heading into Saturday's kickoff. Number one, Gary Patterson's never had, or has only had back-to-back losing seasons or back-to-back subpar seasons, I think, one time in 20 plus years. The other thing is that 11 win season following that includes a loss to SMU. So if you believe in superstitions and history, then maybe there's a little bit of hope. But I think from a rational fan perspective, absolutely. If I'm Kansas, I'm thinking this is a chance to go out and catch a reeling TCU squad and make some noise while you've got the opportunity early in Big 12 play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really what has happened, is that at this point, like, you could say that, yeah, TCU will be fired up. But I also think just with the way that went, you know, with, like, I think it would be different if TCU had won that game, say, 17-13, right? The defense had really shut down very prolific SMU offense, and you knew that TCU could lean on their strength and potentially shut down this Kansas offense really, really, you know, well. But the way that game went, you know, every TCU fan that I've talked to is like, well, wait a minute, what happened to our defense? Like, what's going on here? Is this something we need to be worried about? You know, and I have to think that some of the TCU players are probably wondering what happened there, because yes, SMU has a fairly good offense, but TCU has probably one of the premier defenses. They're supposed to have one of the premier defenses. You would expect they would probably play to a stalemate. You know, I would think a bad game you would expect for TCU against SMU point-wise would have been in the 24 to 27 point range. The fact that SMU scored 41, they got out really quickly and scored really quickly. And I realized that part of that was fed by turnovers by the TCU offense. But you know, the fact that SMU was able to essentially score at will for most of the game really makes you wonder how much doubt creeps into TCU's mind on that defense of, you know, are they going to be able to shut down a Kansas offense that has shown a lot of more life than I think people expected them to.
Well, I do think that there are two things to bring in. Number one, SMU's offense is prolific, and it's also led by Shane Buechele, who TCU's seen two times before. Now, they dominated Buechele and sent him home crying both times, but at the end of the day, he's definitely familiar with what TCU brings. Sonny Cumbie spent a year on the TCU staff last season, very, very familiar with Gary Patterson's defense. In fact, Patterson said after the game that apparently some of the players heard the SMU coaches repeating the signals that Patterson was using and calling them out to let people know what was coming. And then the third factor in that, too, is that TCU started a true freshman, a redshirt freshman, and a sophomore in the secondary, and they were missing one of their top corners. And so there was an opportunity to catch them on their heels, and once they came out and they executed that beautiful trick play, there was just no catching up. And so I don't think that that's who TCU's defense is. I think that it was kind of a perfect storm of everything going right for SMU, everything going wrong for the Horned Frogs. I think we'll see them kind of get back to the middle ground where there's something probably between SMU and Purdue to where they're still a top two or three defense in the Big 12 worst case scenario. And we'll be able to slow some other offenses down outside of maybe Oklahoma and Texas. But this is a prove it kind of moment for TCU and for the players, and the way that the post game press conference went. You know, Gary Patterson sent Sonny Cumbie to the microphone. That's never happened in his 20 years as a head coach since he had an assistant talk after a regular season game. I think it's kind of a put up or shut up moment, and I'll be really interested to see how they respond. A, because it's Kansas, and B, because it's an 11 a.m. game, and C, because I think they all are well aware that this is the turning point of their season and it's coming in game four.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely strange. I mean, I don't think, because we were talking back in the summer about, like, what the key game was going to be for TCU. And, I guess, actually, if I remember correctly, I think we had talked about it being either the Purdue or the SMU game. I'd have to go back to be 100% certain on that. But it was definitely, I think, one of those two games. And those probably, well, the Purdue game went as well as you could possibly have imagined. And
yeah,
that SMU game turned out probably just as bad in the other direction as you possibly could imagine, with, you know, kind
absolutely
of everything going absolutely to crap. So the real question then becomes, like you said, like, this is a turning point moment for this TCU team. So I do want to go ahead and ask just a little bit more about what we're going to expect on, kind of breaking down more of the details of the game, but I do need to throw it to a quick break first. We'll be right back on the Rock Talk podcast. And we're back. All right, so let's kind of turn to the actual individual game that we're going to see here. So first of all, I want to talk about the TCU defense. Obviously, they have, you know, they need to kind of show up in this particular one and prove a point at this point. The question becomes, you know, in terms of their running defense, because I'm taking a look at what they actually have done so far this year, and they have a fairly good running defense, but if you're talking about their running defense is number three in the nation right now in terms of yards per carry. You know, Kansas's strength on offense seems to be the running attack in Puka Williams and Khalil Herbert. Are you expecting that strength versus strength to give us a lot of entertaining back and forth and fireworks there, or do you expect TCU to really be able to shut down what Kansas is trying to do?
Well, I definitely expect there to be some really fun scheming between the Kansas running game and the TCU defense. The one thing that Gary Patterson has always been able to do is take away the thing that a team wants to do well. You know, Rondale Moore at Purdue, again, fresh redshirt freshman quarterback, making his first career start, so that factors into it. But he was a complete and total non-factor, not just in the passing game, but in special teams as well, where he had been one of the best returners in the country the last 2 years. And so I think that what we're going to see is Patterson try to put that game completely in Carter Stanley's shoulders. Carter Stanley, right, starting quarterback, shoulders and to say, you're going to get some yardage on the ground because you're not going to stop that combination of running backs, Luka Williams and Khalil Herbert. Like, it's just not going to happen. They're going to get some yards, but I don't think that we're going to see the, you know, 5 yards per carry average that Puka's put up, and we're not going to see the almost, I think, 9 yards per carry average that they're getting out of Khalil. And so it'll be fun to see if the Frogs, A, can get out in front and force Kansas to have to play a little bit of catch-up, which is not anything that I'm confident is going to happen based on the first three-game sample. And then to see if Kansas does get a lead, can the Frogs stop that rushing attack and force them to you know, either into some get behind the chains a little bit early, maybe have a couple tackles for losses. Garrett Wallow should absolutely be a factor in that regard. And then Ross Blacklock is somebody, too, who obviously just eats up so much space in the middle and can force Kansas to have to go outside and maybe run some plays that take a little bit longer to develop and could lead for some big losses, too, on the ground.
Yeah, I'm wondering, though, based off of, you know, how TCU has kind of built that run defense this year, the three teams that they've played so far, it seems like they have one main rusher who, you know, runs a single type of style, you know, and they've been able to kind of attack that one particular rusher. SMU, I think, is kind of the only exception, you know, and they had one guy, Jones went off for 79 yards. But they kind of shut down the other two rushers that SMU had. I guess what I'm wondering is, because Kansas has really three rushers that have completely different styles, because, you know, they have Puka Williams, who's your quick and shifty, can make guys miss and then take off. Khalil Herbert's your more ground and pound, you know, like power type of runner who has some speed on his own. But really his game is, you know, running through the gaps in the offensive line and really pounding through guys and then taking off. But then Carter Stanley has shown his toughness in the running game as well, with some design quarterback runs, running another different style. How much are you concerned about, even though, you know, TCU is pretty good about shutting down individual players or, you know, certain options, having to deal with three different style of rushers? You know, like, is that a concern for you, or do you think it's as simple as if they can start shutting down the run game in one aspect that the other ones will follow as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day that Patterson is just so good against the run historically that while I still fully expect Kansas to probably, you know, end up in total somewhere in the 130, 150-yard range, I don't think what you're going to see is those big broken play, eat up bunch of chunks. You're not going to see too many of those to where you let one of those guys really break loose for a big run. They'll pick up their, you know, they'll have their 8 and 10, 12 yards. But I don't want to say it doesn't concern me. It's really, really good rushing attack that Kansas has, and they've shown they can lean on it. But I am confident that if Kansas wins this game, they will have had to have done it through the air. I'll put it that way. Patterson's not going to let the Kansas run game beat them, barring a complete and total meltdown again from the offense and putting Kansas in short field situations. Like if there's three turnovers in the, you know, in the red zone or you know, TCU turns it over in their own territory multiple times, that completely changes the narrative in my opinion. But otherwise, I think that Patterson is going to buckle down and say, if you're going to win this game, you're going to have to do it through the air. You have to do it with the pass. He's not going to let Puka and Herbert and even Stanley make such an impact that they are able to control the game from start to finish. And SMU had to win it through the air too. They did eat up some chunks, but at the end of the day, in the second half, when the Frogs locked down and started making their runs, and the Ponies wanted to kind of run down the clock and play more control, but they weren't allowed to do so because the defense really did shut things down.
So just to kind of sum it up, it sounds like what you're saying is Kansas is not going to win this game with 300 yards rushing and 100 yards passing. They're going to have to be at least balanced. With Carter Stanley making some big throws. I guess my real question, you were talking about secondary issues that TCU has had with certain players being unavailable. Are those players still unavailable? And even if they are actually available for this game, how worried are you with guys like Daylon Charlotte and Andrew Parchment, who have shown the ability to make big plays in the passing game?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Frogs are expecting to get Julius Lewis back. They were hopeful that he would be back for the SMU game. He is another senior corner who plays on the outside, one of the more underrated defenders in that defense and in the conference. A really, really good player who's just going to be a steadying influence, not just from the way that he plays, but in communicating to the rest of this young secondary. And so getting him back would be really significant. He was made available this week at the press conference today, and so hopefully that's a really positive sign. That will be a big difference. Vernon Scott, I'm not sure what his timetable. He's the safety that missed last week as well. Our Darius Washington played in his in his stead and had an interception and looked good at times, but was clearly lost at other times as well, as you'd expect a kid making his first start to be. And so getting Lewis back is definitely the biggest key, in my opinion, and anyone else on top of that is kind of gravy. You know, Jeff Gladney did not play as terrible as it looked against SMU, but for, you know, the guy who's supposed to be the best lockdown corner in the conference, he really got burned. James Foshé and Reggie Robertson just made plays over the top of him time and time again. And Bouchel was money. Like, that dude played just completely out of his gourd against the Horned Frogs. He made every throw. He put balls in tight spaces, and his receivers went up and made plays. And if Kansas can do that same thing, they're going to have success, I mean, without a doubt. I don't think it will be as – it won't look as easy as it did for Bouchel and Robertson and Foshé for Kansas on Saturday. I just don't think Carter Stanley is the same type of quarterback. I don't think that he's now his completion percentage is up over 70% on the season or something ridiculous, I think. But I think it'll be, he's going to find a little bit smaller windows against TCU on Saturday, and they're going to make him make some tougher throws. I expect the secondary to play a lot better. And just by virtue of those guys having gotten a start under their belt, an additional start under their belt, they should be a little bit more in sync. And I think that we'll see a much more focused practice leading into this week as well. So they're going to make, you know, this is not Kansas. This is not 2017. The Kansas TCU game I want to talk about. This is, you know, it's not one of those games where we're going to see Doug Meacham sitting eating pizza by himself in the stairwell. Like, it's not going to be that kind of ugly. But I do think that we'll see the TCU defense show up in a way that'll keep this thing competitive, even if the offense struggles.
Yeah. So talking about the offense now, you know, it seems like TCU's best weapons throughout the year have been the running game. And Kansas, on the other hand, their main issues on defense have also been in the running game with that front seven. They do have a very, very good couple of guys in Darius Moraney and then Drew Prox, who have come up real big with that rushing attack. But most of the teams seem to be getting, you know, 4 to 5 yard chunk plays over and over and over again against this Kansas defense. Do you think that TCU is going to try to rely on that running game for, you know, a good portion of the game to try to, one, you know, reduce the number of times that they really have to go on drives with the offense, and two, to try to take advantage of what is probably the weakness of this Kansas defense?
I mean, God, I hope so. If the Frogs don't rely on this running game, I'm going to be absolutely disgusted. I mean, remember that this game Saturday really turned for TCU when on 4th and 1 inside the red zone, they decided to have Shewo Olamilula, who is 6'3" and weighs 235 pounds, drop back and pass as opposed to just fall forward to pick up 18 or 24 inches or whatever they needed. And so I think that there was a certain talking to going on in that coaches meeting after the game where it was, don't you try to pull that garbage ever again. Darius Anderson has been – the thing that sucks about TCU losing on Saturday is that Darius Anderson should be a guy that's in the conversation as one of the best players in college football, especially one of the best running backs in college football, and nobody is talking about him. He has had 150-plus yards or close to it each of the last 2 weeks. He's been an absolute bell cow. He's been a workhorse. He's gotten tough yardage. He's gotten broken up for big plays. He's scoring touchdowns. He's doing everything you want your star senior running back to do, and nobody cares. It's really unfortunate. He's been hurt the last 2 years. He looked like a guy as a sophomore. He had a huge game against Oklahoma, and we thought, man, this is going to be a 1,000-yard rusher. This is a guy that's going to be a finalist for some of these big awards. And then he got hurt, and he got hurt again last year, and this year he looks like a completely rejuvenated guy. One of the good things about missing games is your sophomore and junior season is that you still have quite a bit of tread on the tires as a senior. And so if he does not get at least 15, 16 touches, I think Frog fans might storm the field and take the play sheets from the coaches and be like, what are you doing? And then Shewo had a really, really bad fumble Saturday. We haven't seen him do that since he was a freshman, really. And he kind of struggled, but he came back in the second half and made some really, really nice plays. And so when you have two guys like that that are both seniors, you have an offensive line that, for the most part, has looked outstanding, especially in run blocking. You better run the dang ball 38 times a game and take some of the pressure off your freshman quarterback and allow the offense to get in a rhythm. And if you do that early and you control the clock and you avoid going down 14-0 or 15-0, then you can afford to do so, control the pace of the game, the tempo of the game, and hopefully put yourself in a position to bounce back and get a win.
So you mentioned fumbles, and I think that's kind of the big story for TCU in terms of what could potentially go wrong. They seem to have been having issues, especially in the game against SMU, with turnovers. Specifically fumbles. You know, with Duggan fumbling and losing two, they actually fumbled it six times, but only lost three of them. So it actually could have been a whole lot worse. Are you worried about the ability of this team to hold on to the ball, or do you think that that was something specific with that SMU game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, TCU had seven fumbles against Arkansas Pine Bluff. I don't know what that was. I've never seen. And Jalen Rager had two of them on punt return. So that happens. You're kind of like, okay, first game, a little bit of jitters, a little bit of uncharacteristic stuff going on. No big deal. I'm worried about it. And then they come back and they're really sloppy with the ball again on Saturday. So hopefully, like, maybe, I don't know, it's an every other game kind of a thing. Maybe it's an every other home game kind of a thing. I guess we'll find out. Like, again, I don't want to say I'm not concerned that this is going to be an issue long term. But at the same token, like, I think it's okay. Like, I think that Duggan's fumbles were, you know, I don't think he had time to think in that Purdue game. It was just kind of happening so quickly, and he had been waiting so long for that opportunity that he wasn't super, super concerned about anything else going on. And I think the reality kind of hit him last week. I expect him to be better. I expect the offensive line to protect better. I don't think we're going to see repeat performance in that. And that's like, I mean, ultimately, nobody was good on Saturday, but you can't turn the ball over with a young team when you're playing from behind. And I think that they'll be a little bit more careful, a little bit more secure with what's happening around the football this week. Hopefully, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas has actually yet to get a turnover. They've turned the ball over, I believe, seven times this year. Maybe six, but they have yet to actually receive a turnover yet as a team, which is a little troubling considering, you know, some of the big, well, it's either a little troubling or an encouraging sign, because we're essentially at the same point at this point in the season that we were last year, except last year at this point, I believe we were plus 14 in turnovers. You know, at this point we're minus seven, if I remember correctly. And so, you know, it's definitely an encouraging sign that they've been able to get, you know, two big wins for them. You know, but it's also a little less encouraging because some of these games that are winnable, you know, like last year, you know, sorry to bring it up again, but last year when Kansas beat TCU, it was definitely due to turnover. And if Kansas isn't able to get turnovers in this game, I'm wondering how well they're going to be able, especially down the stretch. Now, the biggest question, and I think the biggest source of frustration for a TCU, you know, defensive coach trying to figure out how to attack the Jayhawks, is that the Jayhawks don't ever seem to actually know what they're doing from week to week. You know, the first 2 weeks they played a very power run, you know, Les Miles trademark style of offense. In the huge upset against Boston College, they played this wide open RPO, you know, all over the place. And then last week when they played against West Virginia, They went back more towards what Les Miles would typically do. Now, that actually happens to be because Coach Dierman, Brent Dierman, you know, he literally wrote a book about RPO. You know, they brought him on the staff as an analyst. I don't know how much input he has actually during the games, but it seems like it's quite a bit, because he was out of last week's game because his wife was having a baby. And he was not available for the game in whatever capacity he normally has. And they completely seem to abandon the RPO playbook in large chunks of that game. So I'm wondering, with him back this week, how much do we go back to the RPOs, and how much is TCU going to be ready to actually handle that type of play? Have they gone up against a team that uses that style of offense at least enough that you're confident in how they'll handle that?
Yeah, I mean, we see so many of those teams, I feel like, week to week in the Big 12, even if we haven't seen something quite like that. You get a little bit of that with SMU because Bouchel, you know, is really good with his legs, and so there's a little bit of those wrinkles into Sonny Dyke's playbook. I think that, you know, Arkansas Pine Bluff, I cannot remember, to be honest, what they were running. But, you know, Patterson is such a defensive genius, even in games where his team doesn't look great. And they did hold SMU they kept him to just 10 points in the second half. But the thing that he always starts with is the most difficult offenses to prepare for. And so I think the first thing that they usually do in fall camp is work against the triple option. We don't play a triple option team. I mean, this is Big 12 football, right? But his philosophy has always been, if you can defend those types of offenses, then you can defend anything. And that once his defense is so predicated on defenders being able to make quick decisions as opposed to having a certain style or certain responsibilities, that I think they're really good in those kind of read and react offenses, because that's how they're kind of geared up to play. And so I think that the thing that has always hurt TCU defensively are teams that have an elite running quarterback, you know, a la Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield, or, you know, even Pat Mahomes was a pretty great runner at Texas Tech, and the teams that can really beat you over the top and take the top off the defense. And so the book on beating the Horned Frogs in the 4-2-5 generally kind of starts and ends with, can you make those off-schedule plays? And do you have receivers that you can throw the ball 30 yards down the sideline that can go up and make a play for you? And so I don't think it matters the style of offense. I think that ultimately that's the way that the opponents find ways to win against the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we almost could have had a triple option coach in the Big 12 if Rock Chalk Talk had gotten its way and they hired Jeff Monken over.
I think that would have been awesome.
it would have been absolutely
our
awesome.
Our staff
I
guy.
Have been calling for it.
Yeah, Parker.
Yeah, it would have been.
Talked to Parker on Stats of War. He's a big fan of Kansas should have hired a triple option coach. And I agree.
Yeah,
I mean, why not? Why not be the weird team in the conference? If you're not winning otherwise, be the team nobody wants to play. Be the army of the Big 12.
Well, right. Be the team that does something completely different. Like, you see West Virginia be successful with that in the Big 12 in basketball because they play a style of defense that nobody else in the Big 12 does.
Nobody else.
And it's
wants
a really
to.
Huge
yeah.
adjustment. And so, like, yeah, if you're not having success trying to do the same thing that everyone else is trying to do, find something completely different. All right, I do want to go ahead and get to do our predictions, and then I have a couple other questions I want to ask you. But real quick, I do need to throw us one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Talk podcast. And we're back. All right, so before we get to predictions, I do have one other question for you concerning the new coach for Kansas. We just talked about other potential coaching options, but Les Miles, what have you thought so far of what Les Miles brings to the Big 12? Whether it's, you know, just kind of having the Mad Hatter back in football and it gets to be at the Big 12 makes Kansas more interesting, or, you know, the new Miles to Go, the series that's on ESPN Plus that kind of takes a look behind the scenes. Like, what has he brought to the Big 12, and what are you looking forward to the most about having a guy like that in the conference?
You know, I'm going to be this person. Well, I'm not a Les Miles fan. I've never really in look. Let me get this out in front before I get all of the Twitter mentions. I know TCU's had its issues with players. I know there have been discipline problems. I know that Patterson has had to deal with things and maybe more than likely didn't handle the Kevontae Turpin situation completely in the forefront. But I have had a real problem throughout Les Miles' history with the way that he's handled pretty serious allegations against players and the way that he's handled discipline. And every team has less than great people on it. That's not something you can control. You can't control what 110 guys are doing. You can only control how you respond to them. And I thought the Puka Williams situation, not just the joke of a suspension, but the way that Miles handled the press conference during Big 12 media days was pretty laughable in my opinion. And so it's really hard for me to get past that. I'm not going to say that Gary Patterson is a perfect person or that he does everything the right way or that any coach in college football does. Les has just always kind of left a bad taste in my mouth when it comes to those types of scenarios. So get that out in front, put that kind of away. Outside of that issue, it's good for the conference and everybody's competitive. And seeing Kansas go on the road and double up Boston College, where my brother-in-law and my sister went to school, was a good thing for the Big 12. Having people pay attention to Kansas football is a good thing for the Big 12. Having the bottom of the conference be so competitive, I don't want to say the bottom of the conference. We might be the bottom of the conference. But having the expected bottom of the conference be so competitive in non-conference play is a real positive. And Les Miles is quirky and fun. And he has that great personality. And he makes Kansas football, like you said, interesting. And people are paying attention to it. And so in that regard, it's a good thing. I hope that he stays and invests in Kansas, that he doesn't just use this as an opportunity to get back to where he wants to be. But that he really does kind of get this program into a really good place and then walks away and leaves it to, you know, whatever the next generation hire is going to be. That's a good thing overall for the conference and for Kansas as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely the hope. And just to kind of circle back real quick to what you were talking about with the whole discipline issue, I don't think that's a Les Miles specific type of thing. Honestly, I just think that's a college football, and really
Sure.
any kind of football type of thing. You know, there's been lots of problems with it. I actually wrote an article. I also write some Big 12 type thoughts over at Land Grant Gauntlet, and that was my first article over there. I was actually talking about domestic violence and the punishments that happened to that. And going through all the different examples of all the different teams in the Big 12, just the Big 12, not even talking about other conferences, and how inconsistent it is, you know, how, you know, players that take responsibility for it and try to do the right thing end up getting a lot worse punishments in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
the guys that
that's
just completely
true.
deny it and don't take any responsibility and don't do anything to try to, you know. So it's just,
Yeah.
it's been inconsistent all over the place. And while you may, and I actually disagreed with the one-game suspension for Puka Williams as well. I personally thought it should have been at least two or three. But really, I think the problem is not any individual coach. I think it's really just the kind of the whole cultural, like all of the culture around football. But to not get completely sidetracked, we are running a little short on time here. I do want to go ahead and get your thoughts in terms of predictions for this game. We've kind of talked about pretty much everything else. So how do you see this game going? Who do you think ultimately pulls out the victory? And you know, are you seeing it being a competitive game, or do you think that one team is going to go ahead and pull out by the end?
I mean, I think it's going to be an absolute slog through the first half. One of those miserable to watch. It's 11 a.m. It's 100 degrees. The sun is shining bright. Everything is terrible kind of football game through the first 30 minutes of play. And then we're going to go into the half with something like TCU leading 13-7 or 13-10, and TCU fans vacating the stadium in droves, going back to the tailgates, which they can no longer return. But I think coming out of halftime, the Frogs are going to have that little bit of extra juice that they need. They'll be able to put some points on the board. Max Duggan's going to get in a bit of a rhythm, and the Frogs will be able to pull away late. And I see this thing kind of being like a 31-17, 31-13 win, where the Frogs kind of reestablish themselves on both sides of the ball. Get to a point to where it's not pretty and there's a lot of mistakes and a lot to build on, but still where they gain their confidence heading into their first Big 12 road game the following week at Iowa State.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting because what I don't think most people realize is that Kansas is very much a second half team. And so if like you're thinking it's a really slog in the first half and, you know, Kansas is only down by, you know, 6 points or so, going in half, I feel real confident that the defense is going to make the adjustments they need to. The offense is going to find some holes here and there, and that they're going to at least keep it competitive. I'm not anticipating that they're going to go in and just, you know, blow them out the way they did against Boston College. But I do think that if that's what we get to in a halftime score of 13-7, you know, then I think both teams kind of settle in and make some big plays and get it going from there. I do think Kansas plays a whole lot better in the second half than they do in the first half. And so I agree that it's probably going to be a really slow start as both teams are filling each other out. Ultimately, I have a hard time picking Kansas to win in a game like this. You know, even though I feel the same way about this game as I did about the Boston College game, not saying that they're going to end the same way. But I do think TCU wins this game. I think it's going to be something around 28-24. But it's definitely going to be a very competitive game throughout. You know, if TCU does win by the kind of margin you're talking about, it's probably going to be because Carter Stanley is driving down the end of the game and throws a pick that gets returned for a touchdown. It's going to be
yeah.
that close. It's going to be difficult, I think, for both of these teams to really get something, you know, good rhythm established throughout the entire game. I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun, and that's really all that we've been – well, fun depending on who you are, because for Kansas fans, coming into the year, we wanted competitive games. Like, we weren't expecting a lot of wins, especially on the road. But if we saw competitive games, we were going to be happy. After the big, huge win against Boston College, I think some fans kind of upped those expectations. But it was really weird. You know, SB Nation does that fan pulse, top 25, where one of the questions they ask is the confidence that you have in your team. After the loss to West Virginia, the confidence of Kansas fans, we had more fans that actually participated, and the actual level of confidence in the direction of the team went up, which was not something that I was expecting to see. But it is a good sign that fans are being realistic and that even if Kansas can't win this game, if it's a competitive game, fans will be happy with the direction of the program, and it's something they can build on moving forward. All right,
yeah.
Final question for you. I do a lot of weird questions. I've been trying to kind of surprise the last few people in our game previews. I did send you this one before we started because I don't think this one would be nearly as fun if I sprung it on you. For those that haven't heard, Gundy, in the Big 12 coaches conference call this week, was asked a very, very weird question by a reporter. I don't even know what the story was, but it was basically a question about a fake story that someone had put on a joke website. And the reporter asked him as if it was a real story and asked for his reaction to it. And Gundy went off on him, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. And to be honest, completely deserved for a reporter who didn't do his homework. My question is, if you had the opportunity to do the same thing, knowing full well that you were going to ask him about a fake story, what story would you ask Gary Patterson, and what do you think his reaction would be to it?
I mean, I am 100% going completely outside of football with this. And apparently last week there was some big protests and raids around Area 51. I have no idea what was going on, but my students kept talking about it. And so it was a thing that happened. And so I want to ask Gary Patterson what his thoughts on aliens are. Patterson is kind of a quirky guy. You know, he's a different kind of dude. He's got a lot of interest outside of football. I would love to just open up the floor and say, Gary, tell me about this raid on Area 51. Did you have your tickets to Roswell booked? Were you ready to go? And just, because I know what the reaction would be, and it would be the last time I ever got the chance to ask Gary Patterson a question. So I will leave the speculating to people on conference calls, and will not be the one to fall on my sword for the good people of TCU in the way of being the one to get fired.
All right. Well, you know, that's completely fair. All right. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was really great to get your thoughts and kind of preview this game. It's always great to have you on the podcast. For those of you guys that are listening, if you haven't already, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Just go out there, search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe. You can give us a rating, a review. 5 stars, nice comments if you can, please. But if not, please at least give us some sort of indication of what it is we can do better for you. If you want to contact us, you can email us, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can reach us on Twitter at rockchalkpod. But that'll do it for tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening. Melissa, thanks again so much for joining me tonight. And we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.